with the verse we started with last week. Again, if you weren't with us, you can listen online, and I recommend that. In the next few Sundays, we're going to do some decolonizing of faith, decolonizing of Jesus, decolonizing of the Bible. This we've been doing for a long time, but I just want to name that specifically. I also want to recognize that maybe naming that, maybe some of your initial feelings may not all be yay. Some of you might be like, yes, thank you, we need to do that work. But if you don't have a yay response, I want you to know that I get that. And even some of the things that we do this morning might help shape that. I want you to pay attention always to the emotions of like what resonates and what doesn't, and just interrogate those emotions. I think that's an important part of our walk with Jesus together. So this, to the angel of the church in Sardis write, these are the words of him who holds the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know your deeds. You have a reputation of being alive, but you are dead. Wake up, strengthen what remains and is about to die, for I have found your deeds unfinished in the sight of my God. So that was last week. And I just want to, it's like one of the senses that they have, especially in the last several months with a pandemic and then just really brazen injustice in your face, videoed. And people's responses. I think one of the griefs that I've been carrying, and even some of the things that I feel angry about, really is a country that has a reputation of being alive but is dead. I think what is evidenced is really the lack of depth and spiritual formation of living from your true self. That is really infects enough of a culture to keep it from being able to live and really understand what flourishing is. So the diagrams that we used last week, I'm gonna bring back up in this message, so you can see those, especially if you hadn't before. But help navigate really what I see as a life of Christ that is needed. You could say now more than ever, but you could say that always. But I would say, especially in a society that is kind of addicted to an external ego self and disconnected from soul, and how a lot of the versions of our Christianity inoculated a culture and a society from that truth. And I want us to just name that pretty boldly and specifically, and draw some contrasts that are pretty stark to help illustrate those. And when we do that, I think it's helpful to understand just how information affects us. Many of you have seen this cartoon before, but it illustrates why new information can be so threatening to us. So I've got the website that you can read this whole thing. But the idea is kind of we have our life, right? Our religion, our life experiences, our family, our upbringing, our traditions, and kind of way of doing something. And something disrupts that, or new information comes, and our current structure isn't able to handle it, and it feels like the whole house is going to fall apart. And we have a way to protect ourselves from that kind of life disruption. So our brain protects you by rejecting that piece of information. No, and have no fear, I will kill it with swords. And it then, you know, builds a moat and a fence and protects kind of our way of being in the world, and, you know, can have a difficult time of growing. And I want us to remember that this is normal, natural, instinctual, and important. I mean, there's reasons to kind of be afraid and not just accept everything that comes your way. But I also want to say this normal, natural, instinctual defense can also keep us from necessary transformation. But this is helpful for me to remember to have both compassion for myself and compassion for other people. So in dealing with, you know, anger with maybe friends, relatives, and some of the responses to either a pandemic or towards police brutality and injustice and Black Lives Matter, I think a lot of what is on display, you know, is this, and that is normal, natural, instinctual, and to some degree it's important, but it's not a measure of discernment. And so even, you know, this morning, if there's something that comes up, like, and you get angry or afraid or ever right away, pay attention to that. But that's not necessarily the spirit of God. A lot of times it's just our, you know, our limbic system just responding. And the spirit is waiting quietly beneath to help us interrogate some of those things, for us to move on and grow in important ways. Last week, some of you, I think, participated in this. Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis, who's a pastor at Middle Collegiate Church in New York City, did a masterclass in how to be an anti-racist. It was a two-night session. And I'll put links. You can purchase those two sessions, and I think they're like chapter two is coming up in July if you want to participate in those. But Jackie's a voice that I really appreciate in my life. And the first session she began, and she shared when she first realized that she was Black. Now, this has actually been friends of mine and people I follow who are Black voices usually have, that's a common question, when did you realize you were Black? And they've got a story, and it's usually around a trauma. And then she just asked this question, you know, when did you realize that you were, you know, and it's a diverse crowd online, but one of those examples was white. When did you realize that you were white? And then said, session two, I want you to be able to, like, answer that question. And I don't know about you, but I was never asked this question before. I don't think I ever thought about this question before. And I thought that was telling. And I had to interrogate that reality. And then I just sat with the question, and the first thing that came to mind was an experience that I had long forgotten. But I was a sophomore in high school, And I want to share this with you. It's an experience I'm not proud of at all. And it's one that really made me pause and, like, I want to confess in front of you. You know, when did I realize I was white? So this summer after my sophomore year in high school, and my church was doing a missions trip to Jamaica to help build a school for deaf kids. And one day we're, you know, all working, but, you know, there was only so many hammers and all the jobs were kind of being filled, and I found myself with nothing. Like, I didn't have a tool and I wanted to work, and there was several like Jamaican guys who were helping with the project, and it's me and one of my other friends in high school. We're standing, you know, with nothing to do, and I say to him, why does that guy get to have a hammer and help? He's not even white. That came out of me. Now, that's a whole lot of levels of messed up. And I remember my friend just looked at me like, that's totally racist, but he didn't say anything. And I realized that's totally a racist thing. And then all of my, like, internal self-preservation starts going, and I laugh it off and do what seems like is pretty common right now, is just to say I'm just joking. But when I think about that question, when did you realize you were white? That was the concrete example that came to mind. And I saw it was very much enmeshed in my Christian story. And I see so much how a Christian supremacist gospel and doctrine preceded and gave birth to a white supremacist way of being in the world, or what some called white body supremacy, meaning white bodies are the default, like, normal way of being human, and everyone else has to measure to that normal human. So that, even the way that's indoctrinated and embodied, is one of the reasons why I don't even understand the question, when did you realize what you were white? Because that is just a condition of being human that doesn't need a qualifier, where everyone else needs to qualify their humanity with some kind of adjective in front of it. But when I look back at that experience, I see how all of the normal paternalistic why short-term mission trips can be so harmful, not helpful. And seeing how my version of Christian identity and whiteness was like that I should be able to serve first. That's like my job as the helper. I came all the way, flew from Pennsylvania to come down here to help you people, and I'm not able to. And that felt like a slight. And it helped externalize verbally kind of a deep reality going on internally. So I confess that. And I want to share a couple more questions. These have been long-standing for me. In what ways has Western Christianity helped to misshape the world we currently have? Just kind of like an evaluative. How have I embodied religious doctrines that have helped to shape a deeply unjust world? And does my version of Christianity simply need to be reformed, or does it require to be completely reborn from the ground up? If I can just take like this millennium, like year 2000, so going back 20 years, and just divide that into two decades, I would say from 2000 to 2010, you know, I started interrogating these two questions. In what ways has Western Christianity helped to misshape the world we currently have, and how have I embodied those? And the first 10 years, I felt like my version of Christianity definitely needed to be reformed. And I'd say from 2010 to now, that it's beyond reformation. It needs to be completely reborn from the ground up. So I kind of see two stages. Now, I want to say, for you, you may not, if this is newer to interrogate, then someone speaking from like, we need to rebuild this from the ground up can be like kind of information that blows the house up, that is, it's just too much. I'm just sharing my experience and story, where Reformation became like tweaking. Like my doctrine of the atonement needed to be replaced and tweaked, or my understanding of the gospel needed tweaking. It needed reformation. It's all these little bits, but the basic like root system and the ground in which it was growing, that was all good, fine, needed to be preserved. It just needed to change out these certain parts. And I think eventually I got to the point where that just needed to rupture. And I call it in my own life a holy rupture, where as much as it felt like a death, it really was a part of life and rebirthing. That the actual root system that this was all connected to was part of the foundational problem that wasn't going to be fixed with simple reformations. And that's what I want to spend this morning doing. So this was the diagram that we looked at last week of seeing external and inner being as ways to identify what makes us up. And this has become a diagram that helps me illustrate and understand what's even going on in scriptures, and has become the lens that I view even reading the Bible and understanding text. And this wasn't always the picture that I had deep down. So again, we talked about like the ego and the shadow, that external self, and then our soul, our true self, our inner being. And that's what's originally blessed by God as good, the bearing of the image of God, the Christ that's holding all things together and really wanting to revive our whole self, is letting the soulful Christ life come up through us. So this is how, you know, then I reread certain passages and put in these words to help me understand what metaphorically what I think is going on. You, however, are not in the realm of the ego, but are in the realm of the spirit. Therefore, brothers and sisters, we have an obligation, but it's not to the external self to live according to it, like its appetites and desires, that limbic system. For if you live just according to the external self, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the misdeeds of the ego, you will live. And that's how I really understand this process of discipleship or growing, transformation. Then Jesus said to them all, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny their ego and take up their cross daily and follow me. So this is how I understand these passages and like these commands and instructions is ways to really uncover and live from the imago Dei, the inner being, the true self of who we are that's enlivened by God, and moving kind of from external self to internal self. These metaphors are what currently help me. And it even helps me understand what salvation is and what the gospel is and all of that in very different ways. So teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Jesus responds, well, what is written in the law? How do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this, and you will live. Now, I understand this really as Jesus is pointing to the curriculum of love will always bring you to the point of moving past just an ego life to the true self. You're going to learn not just to love like your ego or a tribe that reinforces like a big narcissistic ego, but loving your neighbor as yourself, and then that transcends, well, who is my neighbor? And that's not just those who look like me. That's the foreigner, the alien, the widow, the orphan. And it even goes, love even goes to enemies. And that loving curriculum is transformative. It brings you to your inner being, as that's how I understand what Jesus is saying. Okay, this was not always the picture I had. This was more the image, which was what I'll just say is an imperial worldview. So it's Western Christianity, but it's beyond that. It's how kind of all empires kind of have this binary of we're the good guys, everyone else is the barbarians or the bad guys, those that need to be civilized. But in Western Christianity, this definitely took root, starting with Augustine and then really nailed down with John Calvin and that school of thought of your inner being is totally depraved and who you are is deserving of punishment, and not just punishment, but eternal torture. You know, that it could be like a traditional view. Even it's like that tradition is an imperial worldview that has been co-opted and or has co-opted the Christianity to even say like that's the default position. And I'm going to say that is incredibly harmful. And I want to say, like, in general, the imperial worldview has this as a backdrop, that peace is and must be held together by a huge threat and system of violence. So the Pax Romana is we bring peace to the world by imposing like huge penalties, death upon any violation. So the way I picture is this is like people are these totally depraved beings or criminals that need huge threats of violence in order to like contain that depravity that wants to just spill out into the world. And so how this view then gets structured by laws and systems and this idea that punishment is justice. So that's typically like we want justice to be served is we want someone to be punished. So that view of justice is so reduced because God's justice is restorative. It's to redeem and bring flourishing life out of that which might have been deformed or violated or abused or corrupted. This system of state-sanctioned violence needs a huge military. It needs a lot of place to put lawbreakers. So you have mass incarceration. You need more and more policing. This view of the world can never be satiated. It can never be satisfied. You can never spend enough on violence keeping this kind of depravity in check. And even when you hear the word of the criminals, a lot, here in that, like I heard an interview with a Minneapolis police person who was saying why they shouldn't have to live where they police is because I don't want to go shopping with criminals that I put in prison. And you're like, oh, I can maybe understand that. But you see that that criminality is like, that's who this person is this unperson or just lawbreaker. And I need to be protected. I need distance from that kind of depravity. I had one of our neighbors call me to see if we're still interested in, you know, building affordable housing. And I said, yes, we are. And they said, well, do you know that there was a, you know, group home on Shady Oak Road a couple weeks ago that there was a hostage situation and the police had to shut down the road and call in a SWAT team? And I just want you to know the neighbors are really concerned about that kind of stuff, you know, coming here. So it was like one of those. So what I hear you saying is you don't want hostage situations on our church property, as if like, but you see is like this is something that needs to be kept in distance from us in these like neighborhoods of poverty that also house criminals and like the badness, and we need distance and protection from those things. And now I want to just see like how this like gets interwebbed within like a religious worldview. So remember this question again and how Jesus answered it. Teacher, what is the most important commandment? How can I have eternal life? White Jesus, thank me for dying on the cross for your sins. Accept me into your heart and you will be saved. Now, me calling out that as white Jesus might, you know, rupture the tank or might feel overly critical. But I actually think it's important to make these kind of distinctions because a lot of times we just hear religious words and then it becomes like, oh, we just need to defend them. And I think a lot of that, you know, feeling like, oh, I don't want to judge a religious experience actually participates in a complicity that keeps these ideas alive. One of the authors of color who I really appreciate, and I know Christina Cleveland, she's been an important voice in my life. The shorthand that she uses for kind of our white imperial patriarchy as kind of this umbrella of what Western Christianity really is that's just worshiping white male God. That she has, just has as one word, white male God. And it's like, we need to be able to get some distance from these ideas that have deeply enmeshed in our culture, in our churches, in our lenses, so that we can be freed from them. And so no more am I messing around with this. This is white Jesus. This was an idea that grew up through a very Eurocentric, empire-only, colonizing kind of Christianity. Jesus did not answer this question that way. So that we feel like we need to preserve this as some kind of just a both sides-ism, for me, I'm done with that. So, white Jesus, thank me for dying on the cross for your sins. Accept me into your heart and you will be saved. That is how I got in like the door of this. And I think Jesus is always in the basement and can be bring healing. But this for me is not something that can be reformed. This view, we've got to be completely reborn from the renewing of our mind, because I think this is actually an empire, imperial gospel, not the gospel of Jesus. Do not conform to the patterns of the empire, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So this kind of total depravity view of humanity, of the unsaved, and then you just become saved and born again as something that's like just this switch. Really, I think, kept me from understanding that what's really needed is putting to death the ego and finding the life of God that's been there all along, and living from that. So this can completely divorce you from the life that is truly life. You know, the example that I think about is there's a story of this guy on a plane who was he had way too much to drink, and he was starting to hit on and say all kinds of like demeaning things to the flight attendant, and treating her just like as an object. And the guy next to him was like, "What are you doing? That's totally inappropriate. Do you know who's sitting in front of you?" And who was sitting in front of him was Billy Graham. And he's like, "Billy Graham? Billy, I have to tell you that your messages have changed my life." So that is just like a small example of like, I'm fine now. And discipleship is kind of an add-on bonus, but it's not central to what Jesus was talking about. It's like optional. And this is how this affected even the missions work that I was a part of. So love, feeding the hungry, healing the sick, clothing the naked, looking after orphans and widows is not the work of the gospel. These are simply viewed as bait for getting people saved. It's bait for the good news. In and of themselves, they're insufficient because you're leaving someone totally depraved, kind of hellbound, not heavenbound. I don't know if this is any of your experiences, but if I can reduce what has been happening, that was behind of a lot of our mission work. And it's pretty common, like even in like homeless shelters, gospel missions, where you can eat dinner, but you've got to go to the service and hear the white Jesus gospel, because the food is the bait for, you know, what you really need, and it's really birthed out of this binary. And I just want to say again, our original blessing is irrevocable. It's irreducible. It can't be thwarted. God in you, the good in you. And that worldview takes it's an act of faith. It's a rebirth. I'll go to the next slide. This view of humanity, and say like this, you get saved or you're totally depraved, is fundamentally supremacist. It's a supremacist view of the world and of humanity. It's a imperial view. The saved one is always in a position of having, and the unsaved one is always in a position of desperate lack. So the depraved, they're the lost. They need what the found have. And that is information on how they can get saved. The saved one has all the power. The unsaved one does not. The saved one knows the truth. The unsaved one is totally deceived. So maybe you even have this as like, well, are they a Christian therapist? Or are they a Christian artist? Or are they, because if they don't have the adjective Christian in front of them, what they have to offer is a veil over their eyes, is deception, is someone who can't have the truth until, you know, this, you know, magical transformation has moved them from underneath to above. The saved are heaven-bound, the unsaved are hell-bound, and deserve that faith. And we'll call that eternal torture God's love, because God's love requires justice. And justice is punishment. And justice is punishment is the toxicity of empire. It is the way of the beast. So DC talk, inside baseball would be heaven bound. Maybe if that was you. Now in this scenario, Christian supremacist discipleship looks like this, is to hold your supremacy humbly. And supremacists should be charitable with their supremacy. Be supremacist in a loving way, or be a self-controlled, joy-filled, peaceful, and kind supremacist. This is the best that this system can offer. And, you know, this is kind of the, can it be reformed or do you need to be reborn? And I'd say it needs to be completely reborn. We cannot grow the fruit of the Spirit in supremacist imperial soil. It can't happen. It cannot produce the fruit of life. And I think what we see broadly, especially in Christian America, is an inability to live beyond an external ego self. That's just kind of like the broad diagnosis. So I want to just bring us back to this image. Because to me, this is like the new understanding. So here, Jesus is not somehow far away from people. Christ, who is in all things, holds all things together, has given birth to all things, breathes life into all things, is in all of us. And what we looked at last week is we can live our entire life cut off from understanding the true self. That's real. And so this is how I understand all of Jesus's judgment language. All of it is like trying to move religious leaders from external self to understand true self, true inner being, the life of God that's in all of us, that moves beyond boundaries, systems, races, classes, people, because we can see in the other the image of God. And so caring for one another, we're rooting for one another to move from just an egoic level of existence to the life of God truly transforming all of who we have. So that's like the Great Commission. This is actually building wisdom in all people that this is the true life that's waiting to move us past just the external self. Our external self is governed by fear and appetites, the fear of death. It's vulnerable to scarcity and thinking that I need to self-protect and self-preserve. And that, to me, is the revolutionary nature of the gospel. The death, resurrection, and resurrection of Jesus is this true life moves beyond just external to it, the internal being of God that is absolutely eternal, indestructible. It cannot be contaminated. It is incorruptible. Nail me to the cross, heap your abuse on me and shame, and I will show you that's not what's truly life. The threats that are keeping your empire kind of in is not what true humanity is all about. There's something beyond just threats of trying to keep the ego in check. There's the life that's truly life. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity so that by his death, he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. It's this breaking out, a rupturing, a holy rupture, death to ego, life and rebirth of the inner being. To me, is the new ground that can create soil. And it's not hierarchical. This is already in place. And so we're comrades together on a journey for wisdom and life and identifying Christ, that universal, the divine spark. Whatever people have tried to put words to it is actually what I believe Jesus is about. The fear that sense, the universality of Christ, that democratizing of the inner life that really brings flourishing and wholeness to creation, each other, ourselves, and the world, that it somehow needs to be the product of one group is supremacist. So the fear around what I'm saying now, that it needs to be talked about as heretical or dangerous or whatever, or all, is that huge red line of state religious sanctioned violence against the truth actually coming out, because we want to protect our hierarchy that says we're on top, they're on the bottom, they're saved, we're not, we're the ones who know, and that is rubbish. It is garbage. It is from the pit of hell. That is what burns up in Gehenna. That's why if you have that kind of Christianity that is simple, ego, tribal, white, male God, that's what Paul says will burn through the flames and will there will be nothing left except what? Your true inner being. But you'll have absolutely a life worth nothing with nothing to show for it. So there needs to be a revolution and a complete rebirthing of the mind. We need to put to death white Jesus, white gospel, white male God, so that the true Jesus of Christ can be manifest and bring healing to the world, because the systems are corrupt, they're bad, and keep us unwise and dumb. We need a revolution. We need a complete rebirth, not just a rebranding. That's why people like just calling the police something else and saying don't use chokeholds is a reform on a dead tree. The whole way that we conceive of justice has to change, and Christ gives us the resources to imagine that kind of reality in the future. All right. I'm going to close with another poem. This is by the same author, Steve Garnas Holmes. He just retired as a United Methodist minister. It's called Make Disciples. Go and make disciples of all nations. teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. What he commanded was love. Our calling is not to manipulate people, to change their religious affiliation. If that were true, we would be converting people to Judaism. It's to help people become students of the way he taught, to live loving lives. How do we do that? The same way he did. We show them. In the worst of conditions, in the awfulest of times, we show love. We throw ourselves on the mercy of God to help us love, for we can only with God's help. Only by loving will we help others love. But beyond our knowing or seeing, this is the grace of God, that the little mustard seed of our love of a single neighbor changes the nations. In the worst of conditions, in the awfulest of times, we show love. We throw ourselves on the mercy of God to help us love. For we can only with God's help. Only by loving will we help others love. But beyond our knowing or seeing, this is the grace of God, that the little mustard seed of our love of a single neighbor changes the nations. May it be so in us. Amen. Taking a deep breath. I want to invite you now to the table of God.